If I had to title the thoughts this week, I thought it is kind of an important holiday in America. It's a new one. It is the highest geek holiday. It's called Star Wars Day. This is May the 4th, and apparently we like to celebrate Star Wars on May the 4th, and I would be surrendering geek cred if I didn't mention that tonight, so I'm mentioning it, and I'm saying it, and we're going to talk about James, who wrote the book of James, and the epistle of James is all about how faith by itself isn't enough. Like, faith has to be connected with action. So the real title tonight is Faith Equals Action, but I thought in honor of this, I might call it not I Find Your Lack of Faith Disturbing, but maybe I Find Your Lack of Action Disturbing. Oh, you see what I did there? That's wonderful. That's bad, and I apologize. There is more than one James, and there is a book in the Bible called James, and it was written by a guy named James, which makes a whole lot of sense, right? Does anybody know who wrote the book of James? And if you say James, that's not what I mean. Like, it's James, but which James? It was Matthew who wrote the book of James, okay? That would be really confusing if Matthew wrote the book of James. This is what I get for asking questions in the middle of the thing. Anybody? James? Which James? Well, there was Peter, James, and John, right? Was it that James? No, actually. A lot of people think it was that James. And then they get really confused when they start reading the Bible, and they read verses like this. James and John were sons of Zebedee, and so James was one of Jesus' disciples. But if you read through the Bible, you'll find the name James mentioned in spots where it makes absolutely no sense at all. Here's a good example. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, Paul is talking about how he learned about Jesus. He said, "What I received, I passed on to you. Christ died for our sins, according to the Scriptures." Somebody's car alarm is going off. I really hope it's not mine. All right, someone's going to check on that. Do you want to check on ours? I think it's to the right. What's great about this is when it goes on the internet, none of this will ever have happened. It's going to be really hard for you to hear a word I'm saying while that's going on, isn't it? We will. Let's see if it stops or if I'm just going to have to talk over it. Talk amongst yourselves. I'll give you a topic. Car alarms in the middle of something. All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. I'll play some music. You guys talk to yourselves. Oh! There we go. All right. Now I gotta wait for everybody to come back. It's a weird night.
Oh my God.
No smashed window? That's good. All right, everybody good? Everybody good? Okay, good. Check my car? Okay. I'll go running out. Right. Okay, let's go back to this. James is mentioned in a lot of spots where it would make no sense, is what I was saying. Like 1 Corinthians 15, Paul says, "I received what I passed on to you, that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, and that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day, and then he appeared to Peter and then to the 12. Notice that he appeared to Peter and then he appeared to the 12. So who had been part of the 12? That would have been James. After that, he appeared to more than 500 of the brothers and sisters at the same time, most of whom are still living, though some have fallen asleep. Then he appeared to James, then to all of the apostles. Well, that's a strange thing to say. After he's already appeared to the 12, why just single out James and say he appeared to him? Also in Acts chapter 12, and this is why, like, you got to think when you read the Bible, when you're reading through these stories and reading all of these things, you have to figure out what you're actually hearing and what you're actually reading. Acts chapter 12, Herod kills James. It was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, so those two brothers, sons of Zebedee, put to death with the sword. When he saw that this met with approval among the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. Go down a bunch of verses. And what happens is Peter is put in prison, and this is the story where an angel comes and lets Peter out, and then Peter goes to his house, and they won't let him into his house because they think he's in prison, and they're having a prayer meeting at the house to pray that Peter would be released from prison. But James has just been put to death with the sword, and then this verse says this. Peter described how the Lord had brought him out of prison, and he said, "Tell James and the other brothers and sisters about this," he said, and then he left for another place. So it's pretty obvious that there are two Jameses going on. And this second James, the James that people keep bringing up, the James that seems to be really, really important in this story, is not James, the son of Zebedee, but it's James, Jesus' half-brother. Dun, dun, dun. Ah, you're like, oh, yeah, all right. So Jesus, you read the Bible and it says that Jesus grew and then he was 30. And then he went on in his ministry, right? And it's like, we got this thing like he was born and then he was 7 or 10 or something. He was messing with the guys in the temple and then he was 30. But Jesus was not an only child. Joseph and Mary had other children. In fact, Jesus had 4 brothers and we think 2 sisters. We're pretty sure of that. And so Jesus comes from this family. If somebody do the math for me there, that's 7 children total, right? If I got it right, if I can do the new math, the Common Core is really messing me up. I can't add anymore. at least I don't do it right. That's clear. So Jesus has 4 brothers and he has 2 sisters. And James, who wrote the book of James, who is this person that gets mentioned all the time, is really, really important, is Jesus' half-brother. And the most interesting thing about James and Jesus' other brothers is that they did not believe in him. All throughout Jesus' life, James' brothers thought he was just older brother Yeshua. And in fact, you'll find all kinds of verses. They're just sort of scattered in into the story of Jesus, where James and his James and the other brothers and sometimes Mary are kind of showing up and interacting with Jesus in ways that make it clear that they're not exactly sure who Jesus is. John 7:5 says it really clearly. "For even his own brothers did not believe in him." Plain and simple. In fact, that's a great chapter. You should read it sometime. It's where Jesus' brothers all come to him and they're like, "Hey, you've been teaching a lot in Galilee, which is our hometown. You should go somewhere else." They literally told him, "You should go to Judea. That would be a great place for you to go. In fact, anywhere but here would be really great for you to go." Occasionally, they would come wherever he was and they would try to take him home because they thought he was crazy, because he's walking around and saying all the things that he said. James was part of these 4 guys who didn't believe in Jesus, and yet he writes this book of the Bible. So what happened? What happened was Jesus rose from the dead, and as Paul was saying back in that verse we just read in 1 Corinthians, Jesus appeared to the 12, and he appeared to all of these different people. He appeared to 500 people at once, and then he appeared to his half-brother, James, specifically, showed up, and James saw him alive. And from that moment on, from the resurrection of Jesus on through the rest of his life, James gives himself entirely over to God. He believes 100% that Jesus is the Messiah, and he becomes an important figure in the early church. In fact, he becomes the head of the church in Jerusalem. James, we look at as the pastor of the church. If you read the book of Acts and you see all the things that are happening when the council at Jerusalem is mentioned and everybody comes back and they report what's happening with the Gentiles and they report all these different things and decisions have to be made about what are we going to do with what God is doing, and how do we help Gentiles understand how to follow Jesus without being Jews and all that kind of stuff, James is always mentioned. James is so important that Peter says, go tell James and everybody else that I've been released from prison. He becomes this overseeing pastor in Jerusalem. And in Acts 15, we see him making the final declaration during the conference where they all got together and said, what are we going to do about this stuff? And Paul, after his conversion, meets with Peter and James first before he meets with any of the other apostles. Later, we see James giving advice to Paul and Paul following his advice. So James is this really important person. But we forget the fact that he grew up around Jesus. Jesus was his older brother. And he spent a lot of time with him. And yet, it was the resurrection that changed his mind. It was the resurrection of Jesus that changed James from a doubter in his brother to a believer who was willing to go to death for his brother. In fact, not long after writing the book of James, James is sentenced to death and stoned by the Sanhedrin in Jerusalem. Some historians say they took him to this one specific spot and threw him off, and he wasn't quite dead, and then they stoned him. But in any case, he died for his faith. He died for Jesus. It's interesting if you read James chapter 1, how James introduces himself then. If I were the half-brother of Jesus, I might say, James, Jesus' half-brother, I would like to tell you some things. But James introduces himself in chapter 1. He says, James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ. So this change has happened where he's not just his big brother anymore, where he's not just a guy we knew who went a little crazy, but he is the Lord. And how he describes Jesus, chapter 2, he calls him our glorious Lord, Jesus Christ. And James, having become a believer because of the resurrection, everything about his life changes after that. And it's important for us to remember that the resurrection is actually the most important central fact, not only in the life of Jesus, but in human history. And if we don't believe in the resurrection, if we don't believe that Jesus miraculously rose from the dead, there's really no point in being Christians. So what I wanted to do is talk about a few other things that James said. There's a few themes in the book of James, and we'll hit those really quick, and then we'll discuss them a little bit. It's actually a lot like the Sermon on the Mount. If you read the Sermon on the Mount and you read the book of James, the structure is kind of similar. It's like these little sections of wisdom and nuggets, and you can read through there and learn all kinds of interesting things that you could apply immediately to your life. It has this great section about the tongue, right? It says the tongue is a fire, it's a world of evil. You know, the fact that if anybody can control their mouth, they would be perfect. Which is true. If you think about it, if you could control the things you say, then generally speaking, like what could be harder than that? We can say, okay, I'm going to stop, you know, stealing cars, as was happening outside. I'm going to stop robbing banks. But it's much, much harder to stop saying dumb and hurtful things, right? So a couple of themes. One is that faith equals action. There's this idea of is called antinomianism. It was a reaction to Paul's teaching, where Paul talks so much about grace and God's favor and how we're set free from sin because of Jesus' sacrifice on the cross. And so some people took that and said, great, perfect. We are free from all the things that we have done and we are forgiven, so we should just keep on doing them. Because if we do bad things, then Jesus will forgive us, and that'll be all great. So we should just do whatever we want. We shouldn't worry about it. And believe it or not, there are actually a few people today who are alive and who believe in this, and they're part of churches, and I've met them before, and we've talked and tried to figure this whole thing out. And they say, well, you know, Jesus, you know, it's kind of a 3D thing where Jesus died for my past, present, and future. And so, therefore, all the things I've done wrong are already covered anyway, so it doesn't really matter if I did them before, if I do them now, or if I keep doing them or stop doing them. So there's a lot of confusion. And James, when he writes this book, he's writing to change this idea. The other thing that he's writing about is what actions should we take in response to what Jesus has done, what Jesus is like, and what Jesus has taught us. So let's just look at a couple of those, and then we'll have some discussion, and we'll be done. James chapter 2, faith and deeds. What good is it, brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? So he's talking about if you just believe in Jesus, isn't that enough? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes or daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself is not accompanied by action is dead. And a lot of people read this verse and they say, ah, the only thing that James cares about is that you should clothe and feed and all of those kinds of actions. But he's using one example, and he's saying there's a lot of actions you should take that prove that your faith is worth something. And here's one example. If someone came along and you said, oh, wow, I see that you have no clothes and that you can't eat, so go in peace, have a great day, hope things go well for you, but you don't do anything about it, then what good is your faith? But someone will say, you have faith and I have deeds. Show me your faith without your deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. You believe that there is one God. Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. What an interesting way to put it. He said, you know, you say, oh, I believe in God. Isn't that great? Isn't that enough? Had this conversation with somebody last week. They were saying, well, you know, I just kind of believe, I think that believing is really what matters. You know, as long as you believe in something. And James is saying, yeah, the demons believe in God too. Does that make them right and okay? You're like, oh, demon, you're fine then. You believe in God. Perfect. They know God exists. We know God exists. It's not simply a matter of saying, oh, I believe in God, therefore everything's okay. And mainline American Christendom is kind of running down this slope where they're looking at things that are happening in culture and society, and they're figuring out how can we fit in with this and how can we not be in an opposing stream of history. And so they say, well, really, the only thing that matters is to have faith, right? So as long as you believe in God, as long as you put your trust in Jesus, that can be the end of it. And you can continue doing whatever it was you were doing before. And we know that it's hard for you to quit whatever it was you were doing before. And if you think about it, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And what James is trying to say is that the thing that happens when you give your life over to Jesus is that he begins to change the core of who you are. And you actually have different actions now than you did before. And if you don't have different actions now, then your faith is not actually faith. It's worthless. It's useless. If faith doesn't produce something, if faith doesn't cause your life to change, then what is it? It's a mental understanding of something, maybe? If I believe that there is a God, if I believe that Jesus is the Son of God, if I believe that Jesus died for my sins, if I believe that Jesus told me to go into all the world and tell people about this message, then the way that I live my life fundamentally changes, as James's did. Before Jesus' death and resurrection, James was hoping that by doing the good things that were in the law, that he would somehow be saved. But after that, he puts his faith in Jesus. But it doesn't mean that he stops doing good things. In fact, he says, no, even more, because we have the Spirit of God in us, we can do good things and we can stop doing bad things. Since it's Star Wars Day, I'll give you a couple of quotes from Star Wars because, you know, I don't mind pandering a little bit. But I was thinking about this as I was looking through the book of James, and I was realizing that if you look at Star Wars, it's kind of a syncretism of a bunch of different religious ideas, mostly Buddhism. There's a lot of Buddhism in there. Specifically, there's this thing in Empire Strikes Back where Yoda and Luke are talking about the Force. What is the Force? Well, the Force isn't isn't a person, it's just a thing. It's just kind of out there. And today we would call this the universe. The universe is out there. And if you read The Secret, you can learn all about how you can control the universe and make the universe, you know, give you back good things. It's funny that a lot of Americans believe in karma, but they don't believe in God, but they believe in an impersonal force that's out there. So Yoda says, a Jedi's, I'm not going to do my Yoda voice. It's a bad one, and I'm just not going to do it. That's about as far as I go. Sound like Cookie Monster, I do. A Jedi's strength flows from the Force, but beware the dark side. Anger, fear, aggression, the dark side are they, right? And then they talk about it some more. And then Yoda says, Luke says, well, how will I know the good side from the bad? Yoda says, you'll know when you're calm, at peace, and passive, right? And he relates this to this impersonal force that's out there somewhere. And it's funny because this is from Buddhism, generally speaking. It's this whole Dharma idea. But it's also kind of a cheap knockoff of what James says in James chapter 3. He makes this same kind of light side, dark side argument. He makes this same kind of wisdom thing. He says understanding and wisdom that is from God is different from wisdom that's from us. James chapter 3, verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. So that's the first part, the dark side, bitter envy, selfish ambition. That's human, quote-unquote, wisdom. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is, first of all, pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. And James understands that there's this wisdom that we have that says that we get what we want and we go after our own ambition and we envy other people. You see this happening in people's lives every day? You ever have a conversation with people about, well, you know, so-and-so got a promotion, or so-and-so has a better car than me, or man, I just wish I could have the same things that these kind of people have, or I wish that I had the kind of relationship with this person that this other person has. It's sort of like part of our everyday world and life. Right? It's the motivation that people have, envy, selfish ambition, wanting to get ahead, wanting to make sure, you know, I get what's coming to me in a good way. Only the good things, not the bad things. I don't want the bad things that are coming to me. I only want the good things. I deserve a bigger piece of the pie, or I deserve better opportunities, whatever it happens to be. But instead of envy and ambition, and this kind of unspiritual way of looking at the world, James says, wisdom from heaven is pure, peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Let's take those apart for a second. He talks about it being pure, saying the wisdom that comes from God does not look at the world and say, let's get involved with everything that is happening and experience everything we can. No, let's keep ourselves pure. Secondly, it loves peace. I think a lot of us avoid conflict, but how many of us love peace? Like, loving peace means that we, as he says at the end of the verse, peacemakers who sow peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. This idea that I'm going to make every effort to be in good relationships with everybody around me. That God's wisdom starts with loving peace, going after peace, pursuing it. You know, that's not a passive thing. Sometimes people think, well, to be at peace with everyone, I just need to leave everybody alone. actually, to be at peace with everyone, most of the time, you have to get engaged. You have to get involved. You have to have a conversation with somebody so that they understand you and you understand them, and you're able to live and coexist and not have misunderstandings and not have anger with each other. When you know someone, when you talk to them, when you spend time with them, it's really, really hard to hate them. It's considerate, thinks about other people. It's submissive. It's not like sticking itself out there and saying, I'm first. It's full of mercy. Full of mercy. How many of us are full of mercy in our life? I think the world should be more merciful, but it's often the opposite of that. You think of, you know, when you're at work or you're driving. Let's say you're driving. I always bring up driving because it's my it's the worst possible time for me, because usually there's four children screaming behind me and then I'm trying to negotiate, you know, driving at the same time. How merciful are you when someone does not make good decisions when driving, right? Getting in front of you. How merciful are you when somebody is having a hard time at work or at school, and you say, well, you know, they should know better, or they should be smarter, or they should be faster, or they should do a better job. I was having a conversation last week with someone, and they were saying, well, so-and-so, they're just terrible, and they should just be fired. And you go, well, maybe we should try to understand them. Maybe we should try and figure out where they're coming from. Full of good fruit. And this is a big thing for James. He cares really deeply that there is fruit in your life. What he means is that you're producing good things, and people look around and they go, ah, there's good things coming out of your life. Impartial and sincere. How many times do you think that people think of you as impartial? Do people think of you as fair? Do people think that maybe you like some people more than other people? James spends a whole bunch of time on this, talking about how if someone comes into your meeting and they're wearing nice clothes and you treat them better than someone who comes in wearing bad clothes, that you're evil and you're judging wrongly. So I know that's like a broad overview, and I hope you have a Bible with you. If not, you can pop open your phone and go to YouVersion or Bible Gateway or one of those. And let's talk about this. Let me give you three things you could talk about. One, and I know it sounds like we kind of random scattergunned a little bit, but I think these things are all really important, and I want you to pick the one that interests you the most, or maybe two of them. James, the brother of Jesus, why didn't he believe at first? Why didn't he believe later? What does that teach us about people who are resistant to the message of Jesus? What can we learn from that? Is there anything we can draw from it? Second, you could talk about the fact that faith equals action, that faith by itself is useless, but faith coupled with action is powerful and effective. You could also pull open James chapter 3, verse 13 through 18, and you could discuss these two kinds of wisdom and how we could apply that to everyday life this week. Okay, thank you. Good to see you. I'm not going to come back at the end. Go ahead and discuss any one of those that you want to, and have an awesome week.